Every time, because as a kid, as a Chinese, born, like I was born and grew up in Chengdu, China.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very educated with the journey to the West is because my grandpa has been watching it over and over and mm-hmm. over again. And everybody has been watching it. And it's just, it's very, I would say it's a miracle because when you're little, you just watch this little monkey, like mm-hmm. Monkey King, and follow this monk, I think it called Tang Sen in mm-hmm, Chinese, mm-hmm. and it has like the Monkey King is the most senior, and he has like a junior colleague,
yep.
Which is a pig,
yep.
and then the third colleague, it's just kind of weird. Like the third colleague is from a kind of like a river god or
yes.
something like that, and then so when I was watching it, they just have some kind of interesting stories over and over the time, and you know the monk group were just going to the West and getting the West means India,
yes.
Getting some kind of, I actually don't understand the book, so I thought the kids, it was just a funny story or interesting story, but when you grow up as an adult, when you revisit the story, you realize you can apply their mindset, their behaviors, mm-hmm. and all the patterns of different kind of challenges in the different kind of chapters into your work.
Absolutely.
You know,
I was thinking, it just made me think about in the United States, especially in like the 19th century, so 1800s or so,
right.
the U.S. is expanding westwards,
mm-hmm.
and it goes, so there's a lot of media, and I saw a lot of these growing up, cowboy movies and Wild West,
yeah,
and that kind
yeah.
of stuff, and especially growing up in California, we're on the West Coast, but there's a lot of Wild West influence, and we're close to the Southwest, so Arizona, mm-hmm. New Mexico, Texas, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and you grow up watching these cowboy movies
yeah.
that are 100, 150 years in the past, and you see these things, but then you see kind of the moral system of cowboys, and
yeah.
You see how people talked back then, and old school dress and everything,
mm.
you know, riding horses,
mm.
and growing up in the 90s in the U.S., I grew up in the Bay Area, so it's high tech, it's Silicon Valley.
Right.
It's a completely different lifestyle, but mm. I always enjoyed like movies set in the desert and cowboy movies, and
mm.
then you start to look at their value systems and their belief systems, because
yeah.
maybe back then success was defined by being able to have a 50-acre ranch
mm.
out in the desert. So it's so interesting to see the influence of older forms of media
right.
on culture
mm.
and how it kind of shaped what we learned as we grew up.
Yeah, I think that's the wonderful part of this classic novels,
mm-hmm.
why they are classic,
mm-hmm.
because at every age or every chapter of your life, when you read them, when you like the cowboy stories or this kind of Chinese novels, that you realize that somehow you can relate to it in different kind of feelings.
Absolutely.
And that's why I loved it. But as young person,
yes,
like you and your friends, I think what's the difference would you tell that the, you know, the young people and the elders or older generations mm. to see or embrace the Eastern or Asian cultures, and also what's the difference did you find between the young people
mm.
in, let's say, China, Canada,
mm-hmm.
and US?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it has to do with the family that you grew up in
mm.
to start as a starting place. Because some mm-hmm. people, some of my friends I've talked to, they've never even been out of their state in
mm-hmm.
the U.S. or their province in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So travel experience is a privilege and a blessing, and I'm very thankful to have had that.
Yeah.
As well as a family that encouraged experiences and cross-cultural, you know,
mm.
Collaborations. I think that when I was growing up, the world was getting a lot more global, and
mm.
so people were interested.
Right.
Whereas in previous generations, maybe not so much my parents, they were pretty globally minded.
Mm.
I'm a bit of an outlier in that sense, but historically it was more kind of, you're American or you're Canadian. This
mm.
is Canadian culture. We don't need any outside
oh, really?
Culture. I don't think that exposure to the world happened as much as it does now. So I'm in my mid-30s, and I've seen the world get way more international.
Yeah.
And especially living here in Vancouver, it's always in San Francisco, New York, same kind of thing. There are people from all over the world.
It's
so that's the world I grew up in.
Yeah.
Was a very multicultural world. That being said, you know, you've still got your family and everything, and it's really interesting going to visit folks or friends, and you realize how lucky you are to live in an internationally minded city like Vancouver or San Francisco or New York.
For sure.
And you have those experiences and interactions. I also do think that sometimes our values in this generation have been lost a little bit in terms of respect. Just coming from a, and I'm not to say, that's not to say that everyone is like this, but I do think that for our generation, there was always an understanding of you respect people who are older than you. You listen to what they have to say. You take their advice. But I also think that we're in that in-between period where the next generation is very much there about themselves. They take care of themselves. They also don't want to engage with older forms of media or thought. So they're ready to break some cycles. Whereas we were kind of in between. We were raised a certain way to be respectful, to be understanding.
Yeah.
Maybe not to speak out. I have experienced that as well, too.
Oh.
But we're also at a young enough age in terms of the global community to see that there are different ways of doing life.
Wow. Like, actually, you mentioned about, because we're in the very diverse city in, like, Vancouver.
Absolutely.
So they're just, like, everybody is here. You can literally walk on the street and you find 10 people and five of them are from, like, different, they're from, like, at least five different kind of countries.
Absolutely.
However, as an immigrant moving from New York City and also as a Chinese person, I realized that the diversity and multicultural culture here in Vancouver is pretty different than the cross-cultural impact or how people interact with each other from different kind of environment and countries in New York City.
Oh, absolutely. The sense that I get in immigrant communities, now I grew up as an American and Canadian, so the U.S. and Canada are my default cultures.
Right.
And then before that, the U.K. and Scotland kind of thing. So I have those kind of values growing up. And then in California, you have a lot of Hispanic and Mexican influence. In New York City, you have a mix of Italian, Irish, Spanish, also Chinese as well, too. In Vancouver, there's a lot of influence from East Asia, Korea, Taiwan, Japan, all over Southeast Asia, Africa as well. I feel that, it's different because, for example, in the United States, it feels that when you come to the United States, you'll want to be American.
Oh, really?
You know, you want, yes, celebrate your culture, but also make sure that you have the ability to integrate yourself into that culture.
Right.
Whereas in Canada, it's kind of bring your culture with you and you'll learn how to be Canadian.
Interesting. So for me, what I found that the diversity here in Vancouver, maybe I'm wrong because I am still very new here, and mostly I'm just immersed in work and my home. So I might be wrong, but I feel that a different community in Vancouver can be a little isolated.
I've felt that sometimes too.
Really?
Well, where there are different parts of town across Metro Vancouver where, for example, along Kingsway, a strong Vietnamese culture, 70th Southern Vancouver, you have a strong, and same thing in Surrey as well too, a Punjabi and Hindi culture, South Asian. Out in Coquitlam, we have a lot of Farsi speakers, so Persian culture as well as Korean culture. You've also got downtown in Richmond as well, a mix of Cantonese and Taiwanese and Mandarin as well. So they're kind of neighborhoods, whereas in places that you go to in the U.S., everyone is just kind of living together.
Exactly.
There might be a few streets here and there, but it's not quite so neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. So that's such a great word.
It's very interesting because at the end of the day, you know, people are all going to go watch a hockey game together. So there's culture in the neighborhoods, but then coming together to go to events or concerts or everything, that's where you see that integration.
Yeah, but I really think the definition of describing how the different communities and different even affinities in Vancouver's are pretty like neighborhoods.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, we respect each other, but somehow we do feel more comfortable hanging out in where our main community located is. Yep. I'm not so sure if it's because of the security, like sense of security over it. I mean, as a...
I also think that that time of immigration has a lot to do with it. So there is waves of immigration from certain parts of the world. In the 60s and 70s, you get a lot of immigration from Hong Kong, and then again in the 90s. And then moving into the 90s and 2000s, you get a lot of immigration from mainland China as well, too. Over the past 10, 15 years, you get a lot of immigration from northern India, Punjab as well. Earlier on, 40s, 50s, 60s, Caribbean, Commonwealth immigration, Australia, New Zealand, UK. I think a lot of those neighborhoods came together at a certain period of time. So they've grown up over time. And there are, for example, Vancouver's Chinatown has been around for, you know, an extremely long period of time. And it's become a main part of Vancouver.
Interesting. So, yeah. Right. Well, I think that is a very interesting topic. We definitely wanted to continue more about it.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah, because like later we wanted to talk about as also Canadian.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Like, how do they view the immigrants, right? Because there's just so much so to embrace, to accept, to understand, to kind of mingle together. But before that, I really wanted to play this song also recommended by Connor.
Yes.
Could you please introduce
us a little absolutely.
Bit?
So what we're going to listen to is a type of music called Ping Tan, and it's very often, how do I describe it? Like, almost kind of like tavern or bar music. So it's something you would hear when you're out at a restaurant somewhere. It's more... Exactly. It's more casual style music. This, what we're going to listen to, is called Autumn Lament. And it is very simple music. So it has the pipa, which is a plucked guitar.
Pipa,
And then there's a very distinct style of singing that's from kind of coastal southeastern China in Suzhou.
Let's appreciate it now.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's super cool music. I love that style. And we were talking last week and a little bit before, you know, a lot of people, sometimes their first experience with Chinese music is Mandarin pop or Canto pop.
Really? Lai Cai is something.
Yeah.
You know, there's something like, I need to play it next time. It
Absolutely.
Called like Da Zhan Hong Tu, something like that. You know that?
Totally.
It's like really, it's really popular. I love the beats, and that dude who wrote that song got super popular, and now he's having like a tour in the U.S.
So
I think
my kind of first experiences with Chinese music were definitely like Jay Chou and so Taiwanese pop, Mandarin pop, pop groups, girl groups, and it really was only later after I went to university for music that I got interested in older styles of Chinese music. So like Ping Tan, also Guqin or Guzheng, and because I studied classical music, so it was all it's music that's several hundred years old.
Right.
So it makes you think about what kind of music is there around the world that was at that time? Because it's not just Europe or North America.
Mm.
There's music from all over the planet.
Right.
So I love exploring older forms of music or music that your parents or grandparents would listen to. And I love it's time travel in my mind.
Yeah.
So.
I loved it. But like, it really reminds me next time I'm going to play this super viral song in on TikTok.
Yeah.
It's like the Da Zhan Hong Tu, something like that. It's just, you know, the way they sung it, sing it makes me feel a little shy to say this because it's really a traditional Chinese style, but like I will show you next time, and it's super great for you to, I think our audiences even in Canada,
absolutely,
US will recognize it.
That's the whole point of this kind of cross-cultural communication.
Right.
That's the whole point of this show, is that, you know, we bring cultures from outside, we bring cultures from inside, we talk, we also see where our common, you know, our understanding, and also where not just interesting differences, but also cool commonalities.
Right.
How we experienced and grew up in different cultures, but we still had the same kind of building blocks, the foundations.
Yeah,
of,
and also like both of us, and also my friend circle, your friend circle, we love, also because we're in Vancouver, it's a huge diversity community, and then we love to embrace and know different kind of culture that
Absolutely.
Really enrich my life. However, we also hear different kind of voices. People are like being a little negative about how, you know, different kind of communities are going to get mixed.
You'll always have people who want to say negative things.
Yeah.
And I've experienced that. When I came up from the United States to Canada, that was the first time in my life that I've actually experienced negative emotions because of where I'm from.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because growing up in the U.S., you're American. That's it. You're American.
Yeah.
Maybe you've got some background from Scotland or Mexico or Japan or whatever.
Mm.
But you're American. We all kind of accept each other. But coming up to Canada, it was really interesting because, you know, I did have Canadian background. My dad is from Quebec. But I grew up in the U.S. and I was still very much Americanized U.S. culture, right? And so I had to kind of adapt and adopt Canadian culture, Canadian customs, being a little bit more reserved, a little bit more polite, because I have no problem speaking out and being fun and loud and all that kind of stuff. So I have to kind of tone it down a little bit for Canada.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. It was the first time where I got some negative feedback and negative emotions just because of where I was from.
Right.
And so that opened my eyes to, hey, that's not the best attitude.
Yeah.
So for me, after having experienced that, I wanted to really go out of my way to introduce myself to other cultures, language. A big thing that we've been talking about a lot off air is cuisine as well, too. So I think it's really important for us. And that's a great way to get people interested in culture, is to start with something like music or something like food. Because there are elements of culture that are really deep, and you have to kind of either have family in that culture or live in that culture for a while, a couple decades, to understand it.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, like, I do wanted to talk about cuisine, but when you mentioned about you feel a little bit excluded when you got here, and I actually feel that a lot, almost during my whole adulthood. I would say, like, because as a Chinese person who got into the Western world when I went to New York, when I got my first job in Qatar, Doha. Mm-hmm. And then I feel very excluded because I just felt like we speak different kind of language. Yeah. And then how do I behave? How do I dress up myself is very different than locals. And then I try to adjust myself to adapt to the U.S. culture, especially for the New Yorkers mm-hmm. culture. And after I become like pretty New Yorker, I moved to Vancouver and I joined some Chinese community and activities here. I became the weird person again.
It's true. I totally understand that. Yeah. I even had that going from the West Coast, which is a fairly relaxed, chill, right. understanding, pretty, you know, calm kind of place. And then coming to the East Coast in New Jersey, I had to do the same thing. New Jersey, New York culture is very similar. And it's loud, it's outgoing, it's aggressive, but people are very loyal, I find. And then coming to Vancouver, it's a little bit more reserved. You have to kind of, for lack of a better word, you have to kind of prove that you're serious about it. And you really have to work hard to get into some communities here. That's why I like CJSF, because it's just kind of accepting and welcoming from the start.
CJSF is amazing. That's why we're having the show. And I loved it because I think this place is the great combination of the Canadian Vancouver culture. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it also accepts us create this platform and the environment for us to be not feel excluded, but we can gradually adapt and find our own position.
Absolutely. We were just talking briefly about cuisine, and we'll have to probably do a whole episode on it.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing that Charlotte mentioned is she asked me, okay, you're sharing Chinese food to someone who has never had it before. Right. What would you share with them? And I would also ask the same thing. You're sharing North American food with someone. What would you recommend them?
Well, I have to say that is an extremely hard question because I do have more than one thing in my mind. So I would say three different kind of things.
Okay.
All right. So the first thing, I'm not so sure, but I think a lot of American people would agree with me. It's very normal food.
Yep.
That is Popeyes.
Oh, yeah. I love fried chicken.
Fried chicken.
It's
yeah.
so good.
It's so good. And they make it so affordable. I loved it.
Yep.
And the second thing is the Texas barbecue.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad you said that. Barbecue is fantastic. It's so good. For me, for Chinese food, again, I think the same thing with North America. There's a lot of regional variations, and it's hard to put them down. I would say kind of top of the list would be like Shanghai Xiaolongbao.
Oh, I'm disappointed because I'm from Chengdu. We love hot pot.
Yeah,
so how dare you?
No, hot pot is on the list.
Right.
I would also say Cantonese barbecue.
Cantonese barbecue?
Yeah, Cantonese barbecue.
Wait, I thought you would mention about Cantonese dim sum. I've already had that.
Dim sum is very good.
What is Cantonese barbecue?
Cantonese barbecue, things like cha siu, siu yok, siu mei, so for the Cantonese words, roast pork, barbecue pork, roast goose, roast duck. Mm. That's very good. For Sichuan food, and see, this is the problem I run into. So people say, oh, Chinese food, and I'm like, okay, where? Where?
Yeah, you're very, I would say you're like half Chinese. You point out the problem very correctly. Is that, where? Like, we're so different. If you say dim sum, I would say I love dim sum so much, but I would also get offended why you didn't say hot pot in front of me.
It's true. I'm sorry.
Apology accepted.
And I also think that for me, Sichuanese cuisine is such a huge topic, the same way that Shanghai and Jiangsu cuisine, Cantonese.
It's a whole episode.
I really liked the, like I said, that it's like dry fried beef and chili pepper beef, but it's not in a sauce or anything. Obviously, hot pot is so good.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
There's a different kind of hot pot,
there
actually.
Is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's very easy to make, people. You don't have to go to Happy Lamb or any of these other places. You can make it at home.
Yeah.
And so we actually have a tradition now in our family for New Year's. We do hot pot every year.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah, for New Year's.
Is that like a mala or the mild pepper one?
I like the spicy. I like the mala, the spicy, tingly one.
Right.
But we actually have the one where it looks like a taiji tu, so it has the two flavors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Oh my God, that's so much. And I also want to talk about like Beijing kaoya or Beijing like the duck something.
Oh, absolutely.
But that's another whole episode.
We'll,
Next time, I'll prepare some like rapid fire question and give Connor some hard time.
Oh, please.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, very appreciate you guys are tuning in us today. And our show is called Call Me Negotiator, although we're not necessarily talking about negotiation theories, but we talk about cross-cultural communication. We talk a lot of interesting, funny things. And if you have any question, you can just email us, callmenegotiator@gmail.com, or you can just listen live at cjsf.ca, or if you're a Chinese-speaking audience, please come to the WeChat live stream under 野蛮生长夏洛特. So we will see you next Thursday at the same time. All right. I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.